You're listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome. Join our regular team and maybe a few special guests as they give you the lowdown on movies, TV shows, games, or just whatever they want to talk about. It's the best of geek from week to week, live on Twitch and direct in your ears via the podcast.
I'm gonna go swim with Zelda.
Gogoltech's newest endeavor is a chip implanted into couples' brains to merge their thoughts.
Hazel and I are users one.
Our minds will be one.
Technology has improved the way we live. Why not improve the way we love?
Together, we will become a singular living god.
I want it out, and I want a divorce. What happened in there?
It's a lot to explain.
Planes, shotguns, acting like you're running for your life.
Hazel!
Have you ever thought of just lowering your standards in terms of general happiness?
He's watching us right now for a trip that he implanted in my brain!
I've been working on this my whole life.
I don't know what I want, but I know I don't want you.
You can't merge. She'll die.
Or she won't die. She'll live here.
You like what you see? Yeah? You want to get a little closer? Let's get right in there. You like that? You sick.
Who are you talking to?
No one's here.
I know, that's why I asked.
Hello!
Welcome to the Periodic Table of Awesome.
We didn't talk before this.
We didn't have that conversation.
Our communication is breaking down, and I really feel like we need to have a conversation.
Well, I'd like that, but I think it'd be a lot easier if I just put a chip in your head, and then I wouldn't have to have the conversation with you. I just know what you're thinking all the time.
So romantic.
Wouldn't that be so much better? And then you wouldn't have to worry about anything at all, ever.
My every whim would already be catered for.
Yeah. Sorry. Man. Hi.
Hey.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm totally fine. I don't think that's what they would use that chip for.
you don't think so?
Catering for Jill's every whim. I feel like it might go differently.
I'm a very, very nice guy. I'm the nicest guy around, and I would make sure.
Trademark.
I would make sure that I would be so good to you. I would make sure that no one would ever be nasty to you again, because the only person you could ever talk to is me.
I mean, you can't be that nice. You're not even wearing a fedora.
Oh, he's looking around. It's going to be just off screen. It's just off screen.
I hate that that's my shtick now. I look off screen and try and find the thing. Do I have one? Yes, there it is right there. No. I found myself feeling so uncomfortable for the entirety of watching this. Not because I am that person. Fuck, I hope. I don't think
I'm
that
person. I don't think so. No.
But
definitely
just because,
not a Byron Gogol.
I feel like this is a show that invites the conversation. What's the creepiest date you've ever been on? Because this is a show that takes it to a whole new fucking level. Mm. Have you, because you are both women who have been on the dating scene and everything like that, have you ever experienced anyone even remotely as creepy as this motherfucker?
I like to think that they're all screened before they get to the date stage.
Good.
Though I have been on a date with someone that was extremely intense. And going on the second date was kind of dread-inducing, and I had to end it.
I think I remember talking to you after that one.
Yeah. It's a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah. Pete, where are you at with this?
I mean, I've definitely been on some date situations that got uncomfortably intense, uncomfortably quickly. But that also might just be the way I measure intensity. But I certainly have secondhand experienced by other people relationships, men that are pretty much this controlling, just without the technology that is attached to it. A lot of this rang too close to home for me. And I'm glad that the technology doesn't exist. Very glad.
Yeah. So this is actually your choice, Pete, wasn't it? Like this is your suggestion?
Yeah, I started watching this when it was first dropped on Stan ages ago because I saw the trailer for it. I think we might have shared it in our little group. But it's got a lot of things that I love. Like it's got sci-fi, but, you know, through a female lens, which is fun. But it's also like super dark comedy and very absurd. In many ways.
All of them.
And then, it really did, like, because it kind of hits so close to home in terms of that narcissistic personality type that we get to view in this, and then kind of taking that to an extreme what if, which is what sci-fi does super well, I found it really interesting. So I watched first season as soon as it dropped, and I finished second season, you know, a little while ago, and I really enjoyed it, but in like a weird, like, this isn't fun, but it's fun way.
That's, you know? That plays for me because I've put my hands up to it now. I have only watched the first season. I didn't get through season two. I got to the end of season one, and I was like, okay, I will continue on to season two. So when we come to spoiler land, I'm okay with that. I may, you know, either pull out one ear or something. I don't know.
Okay.
But, I think, like, the ideas, and this is what I get excited about for this sort of thing, is that it reminds me a little bit of Severance, not in style or anything like that. It's completely different. But I love that we've now got this thing of doing ideas-based sci-fi, you know, and it's one creepy idea that you then sort of extrapolate over however many episodes.
Yeah.
And then I dig that a lot.
So this is actually based on a book, which I would very much like to read, but I have not yet read. Mm. And I think that kind of makes it interesting because when I started to watch it, I did not realize it was an adaptation. And the book's by Alyssa Nutting, and apparently is very, very, very good. So it's on my list now to check out as well. I don't know. Should we synopsize before we get heavily into it?
We probably should. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Though I do want to just shout out to Rob, who the concept is very Black Mirror, but it's substantial enough to be a series. And I actually agree very much. Like when I started watching it, I mean, I really felt like, oh man, this is a Black Mirror episode just with more facets. But we should probably find out what it's actually about. I don't know whether we actually have any music, but that's okay. I'm sure that Dion, who may or may not be, yay, there he is.
Existing Cantina music.
Wonderful. In the cloud. Man, this synopsis doesn't go with this. I love it. A woman is on the run after 10 years in a suffocating marriage to a billionaire who has implanted a monitoring device in her brain, allowing him to track her, watch her, and know her emotional data as she tries to regain her independence. That's the very, very short synopsis. But kind of covers it. I feel like that's the most basic sort of touch points, really, isn't it?
Yeah,
so, really is. And to take Rob's question of what makes this concept worthy of being stretched out over a series rather than just one episode. And I think one of the big things for me is character development. There is enough character development of the key characters. And not just, I forgot the main character's name. That's terrible, Hazel? Isn't it? Not just Hazel, who obviously we're following and rooting for. Like, there's really great character development on Byron, you know, love it or hate it. And Hazel's dad, Herbert, is terrific and has a lovely arc for the two seasons as well. So I personally think that they do manage to hold for a series, but because they go into the development of these characters, they give Hazel kind of more to do than just, you know, escape. The escaping is only kind of the beginning of the story, and it's kind of like, you know, Breaking Bad. You think the whole thing is going to be about her escape, but actually that happens at the beginning, and the rest of it's kind of the aftermath and how do you disconnect from a relationship that has been that controlling, but with the technological twist to it as well.
It's interesting because it does have that feeling of if you have left an abusive relationship or a really unhealthy relationship, you know, it takes a very, very long time to actually unentangle yourself, like mentally, emotionally, all of these things. There'll be a very long period of time that you continue to feel things holding on to you. And this is just taking that to a whole different extreme because, you know, the person is still literally inside your head. Mm. And, you know, I've left a relationship at one point and, you know, felt like that person was still following, you know, that person was still, you know, trying to be involved in your life. Imagine if they're actually involved in your life and can see everything you're doing and can call you and fuck up your life at any given second.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's that hard to imagine in a world like that at the moment with social media and just being able to monitor people on socials. Like, I've had friendships and not in a good way either. And I'm like, well, I don't want you monitoring me on social media because, like, part of the whole friendship breakdown was like control over who I was friends with outside of it. And so it's like, well, you don't get to see me enjoying my life if you don't want to be a part of it. So block, 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 block.
The power of the block button.
Yeah. If only you could do that with a chip in your brain.
Well, yeah. And it's funny because I do remember there is an episode of Black Mirror that sort of reminds me of the where one of them, you are allowed to block people out of your life, and literally it just cuts them out and fills them in with static.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. So even though you may still see them and stuff like that, they just become a blob of static. You can't hear them. You can't.
I would opt for that. Yeah. I'd be down for that.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even have to know that I can't see them. No. Oh,
they'd probably notice.
Yeah.
After a while when they're like, Jill. And you're like,
just,
yeah. I mean, sorry, we've gone into dark territory here already, but then again, that's kind of the show.
Yeah.
There are other characters in there that I really liked. They're interesting secondary characters. So obviously, you know, your main leads are Hazel and Byron, but then you get these sort of people who are in the periphery. So there's Fiffany.
The name's great. So good. Not Tiffany, it's Fiffany.
And Herringbone, who are two people who have worked for Google, the company, and are now starting to have some kind of, I guess, awakening or awareness of that what they're doing is wrong or no longer cool. Yeah. Though I kind of get the feeling that Herringbone, that's not really where he's at. He's just like, he wants out and wants money. And then all of the characters from Hazel's life, pre going into the cube, and we didn't actually mention the cube, did we?
Oh, right, yeah. So the cube is this Google construct where people that work for Google live in and work in the cube. Like, so it's not just Hazel that has been indoctrinated into this lifestyle, but everybody that works for the company can't actually leave the cube either.
No. And the cube is climate controlled and has no smells and no, you know, the sun is perfectly managed and everything is. And you get the distinct impression it would be disgusting. Like that feeling of when you go into a big shopping center or something like that, you know, and it's perfectly always the same temperature.
Yeah,
and
there's no, a little bit disconcerting.
Yeah, yeah. And yes, I don't want to live
But
there.
Much like the terms and conditions you get on your iPhone agreement or something, you have to sign when you join on with Google to become part of the cube unit, and like it states in your contract you cannot leave.
Yeah, or you may be put out to pasture. The pasture cube.
Go to the pasture. Farm.
And I love that too, like, you know, that even their firing process or whatever is kind of creepy and, you know, there's like it really feels like it's sort of almost a companion piece to something like Severance, because it is, you know, this concept of gigantic multinational corporations that have way too much money and no answerability at all.
Yeah. I love that they called it Google.
Yeah.
Subtle.
They are skirting the line there, I've got to say. You know, who has the richest lawyers, I think, would be an argument that might be made in the future. But I like Byron Gogol, who also has basically made up his own name as well. Gogol being the company and then basically the slaves to the company, you know, Amazon style. That once they're with the company, they literally give their lives to the company. You sign up with Gogol, you sign up for life.
It's like an amalgamation of the big three, like Amazon, Facebook, and Google all merged into one. So it's like, what if you had your Bezos Zuckerberg style front man, but like with the power of Google?
Yeah.
It's very scary.
And just
probably not that far from real life Jeff Bezos and Zuckerberg. In my imaginings.
It's Elon who's actually making a brain chip at this point. So,
oh, fuck, God. Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It really is a conglomerate of the three, isn't it? I can very much imagine Byron Gogol being just that.
He's
weird
a charismatic Zuckerberg. Like, if Zuckerberg had a soul, he would be Byron Gogol.
I'm not entirely sure about the soul.
Oh, you can't watch season two.
Right.
I find Byron Zuck really super interesting throughout the two seasons, which we'll chat about later. But I find what they do with Byron and my reaction to him as an audience member also super interesting throughout the two seasons. And Hazel as well. Like there are lots of, moral quandaries built into this plot, as you know, I guess any good sci-fi or spec fiction, they are asking the questions of what is right, and you know, when this kind of technology exists, does that change what is right? And it's not just Byron that necessarily is making the amoral choices through the plot, and again, that just kind of gives it that layer of complexity with the characters that makes it continue to be watchable, because you don't have one character who's like, this is the evil character and this is the good character and now I'm bored.
I mean, through most of season one, it is kind of a pretty clear sort of layout that Hazel is the escapee and the survivor, Gogol is the you know, the aggressor and the bad guy. But then, end of season one, you hit a point where you realize that there is a detente between the two and he's still a terrible fucking human, but there is learning happening. Yeah. And also all through season one, you're realizing and learning that Hazel is, morally pretty fucking questionable in some ways too. And I love it. There's the character of the father, who
Herbert.
And thank you. I have to look. Which Ray Romano in a.
I love Ray Romano in this kind of role. You know, in a dark comedy or dramatic role, he is actually super great. And it's so easy to dismiss him because so much of his name is from a studio sitcom. But he is terrific. I've seen him in a few of these roles now, and I'm a kind of a big Ray Romano fan at this stage.
Never would I have ever said I'm really looking forward to watching something with Ray Romano in it. But actually, yeah, he's really great. And yeah, Herbert the Pervert. And I find his, like, I love that they pull it out occasionally to sort of examine the idea of what he is, because Herbert has a sex doll.
I think they call them real life dolls.
Yeah.
Technically. It's not an inflatable sex toy doll. It's a real life doll. So it's those very expensive, like $2,000 lifelike companions.
Yeah. He does use a phrase for it. And I can't remember. It was like an intimacy. I can't remember what it was, but it was one of those things. But yes, as you say, it's super lifelike, you know, realistic skin, perfect hair. Big, and Diane, I like what you said before, Peter. Diane doesn't have much of an arc.
Bit stagnant as a character.
Yeah. I often wonder whether or not they changed Diane, or at least the facial expressions a little bit.
So I was reading an interview before we got on, and apparently they modelled Diane's face on the face of the author of the original book.
Oh, wow.
Was also involved in scripting the series. I thought that was a fun little...
That's kind of creepy.
And this series, the other interesting thing about this series is that it was conceived and written before COVID, and they got through four episodes and then everything got locked down. So they shot the first season in two halves and were able to kind of rewrite a little bit the second half of the season based on what they'd got in the first half. Which
interesting
kind of just an interesting surviving through COVID moment, because that could very easily have killed something like this.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha.
And then coming back from a second season is great. The showrunner who has written and produced it as well, Christina Lee. Her credits include Search Party, which is okay. Which is I actually couldn't finish watching Search Party because it stressed me out way too much.
I don't know about Search Party. What is Search Party?
We can talk about that later. That is a very, very stressful series. But also Super Fun Night, which I thought was a fun series. Series as well.
Another one that I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with either of those.
We've got some watching to do. Oh, guys, now you've got to watch Search Party. Search Party, I think, is on SBS, and it is just, it's not going to tell you anything about it. I got through a season and a half, and I got so stressed I couldn't keep watching it. But I'm told, particularly the last season, is an absolute work of art. So I'm trying to work myself up to get back into it.
Okay.
So Dion's going, get more common denominator TV. Yeah, come on, Peter.
Search Party isn't unknown. Like, everyone, it's not my fault that you guys have never heard of Search Party.
Oh, you can't help it if we're uncultured swine. No. It's such an interesting idea, and I love, I don't know, did you find that partway through the series, it changed tone? This is talking of season one. I felt like it started in a particular way, and round about episode four, it took a very weird tonal shift, and mostly in the music that they chose, mostly in the way that it was edited and stuff. But I felt like there was a very, very distinct shift somewhere around 4 or 5, where it went from being kind of like, I really don't know how to describe it, but this, the second half of it felt an awful lot more like Utopia, where the music starts getting a really weird kind of synthy vibe. And and it gets this quite unhealthy, unnatural kind of thing. And I don't know whether it was just me or whether I wasn't paying attention to the earlier ones or what, but, and that could actually explain if it was the COVID thing that, you know, they've shot and made their first 4 episodes or whatever, and then the second half of the season gets a different vibe. I don't know. I'm really not sure. But yes, very, very interesting. So
I would have to say, seeing as it's been a while since I've watched the first season, I cannot remember that much detail about the stylistic elements of it.
And same with me. I binged both seasons in about a week, and that was a couple of months ago.
So is it when Peter said that we were going to do this?
No, actually,
John and I have been chatting about it.
Yeah, across it. I was looking for something to watch, and Stan's actually got quite a lot of really good content at the moment. And so I was just like scrolling through stuff, and I thought, oh, what's this one? Because I like Kristen Milioti, and I thought, I'll give this a go. And I'm like, oh, shit, this is good. And like, done. Two seasons done.
How great is she, by the way?
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't have anyone else in this role.
She's amazing. And I love that, you know, we've seen her, like, people will probably remember her. Well, people watch this show will remember her from that standalone episode of Mythic Quest. The bottle episode of Mythic Quest, which was about the previous game company. And she was one of the two people that ran the game company. She's also in Black Mirror and a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
But I was like, ah, you're that one. And of course, Palm Springs as well.
Yes.
Oh, which is terrific. That's too. If anyone's looking for more recommendations.
Yeah.
You don't have enough content.
Yes. No. More. Give me all the content. I think Billy Magnussen is very, very good at being very, very unpleasant.
Not just that, but like unsettlingly weird.
Something about him makes you think, I don't want to be near him.
I'm like, you're a weird dude.
Especially at the end of the first season, like they're sitting in the diner and they're going to the point where it's all about, so the first season is very much about the divorce and trying to get to a point where she is now legally separate from him, and they're sitting in a diner, and the most disturbing moments where, you know, things that obviously work for him in some way, just you're like, oh no. Oh
yeah, now I remember.
yeah.
He's got this weird robotic kind of shut off from humanity vibe about him.
And I think his look actually really works for that, because he is kind of that, you know, perfect.
Yeah, like out of a magazine kind of person.
Yeah, perfect blonde hair, perfect chiseled jaw and everything like that.
Devoid of personality.
Ken doll. But
yes, he's a Ken doll.
But not like Ryan Gosling in the Barbie movie, which looks amazing.
So oh, God, I can't wait for that. Oh, we are so doing Barbie movie on this show.
I know, fucking oath we are. and I don't care what you think, Dion. So I guess we could probably start talking about a rating for it. Is there anything else that you feel that needs to be talked about, Pete? Because this was your choice, and I don't want to leave it on
I think we've covered. I'd love to jump in and spoil season two for everyone after we rate, or should we not? Should we let people go and watch it?
Oh, no. I think...
I don't know, chat, what do you think?
I know that Predator Kanga, who I think has left because of bad internet, had watched it. Did anyone else in the chat manage to check it out? Do the homework?
No, they're just talking about me and fluoro. So I'm very excited about my guest appearance in the Barbie movie. I will be
another Ken.
Yes, absolutely. I will be Ken who's let himself go. Middle-aged spread Ken. Which I'm fine with. Big Ken, because I'm excited.
I forgot that guy.
Uh-huh,
yeah. Oh, my God.
Chat doesn't appear to have a strong opinion.
Okay, fine. You, we'll spoil it then. Totally spoiling it.
I think it's worth spoiling. Also, I'm very keen to hear more about where it goes, because getting to the end of season one, I was kind of like, okay, this is going in interesting directions. And I really had that question of, because as you said before, there is that feeling of the escape should be the whole series, but it's not. It's just the start.
Mm.
So what is the bigger arc? What is the bigger narrative? Sure. So I'm keen to know more about that. You know, a few people saying, no, they haven't done the homework, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I think this is
won't hold against you.
No, and also I think this is a show that kind of rewards you whether you know what's going to happen or not.
It's fun just to watch the characters doing their thing.
Yeah, yeah, and being creepy and weird and strange and wonderful. Okay, so, and yes, there are many shows, Casper. It's okay, we'll let you off the hook. Well, it's fine. We didn't even talk about Zelda the Dolphin.
Well, we could talk about Zelda in season two, though.
This is true. This is very, very true. Okay, well, let's ratings. Do some ratings. Do the numerical thing. And if you have seen it in the chat, put your ratings in a numerical format using the thing. The out of 100 thing.
Yeah.
That I've put in the chat just like that.
There we go.
Oh, my God. Casper hasn't started season four of Stranger Things.
That's a discussion for another time. But
it is.
I am going to go in with an 88.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
I really enjoyed the series. Without any prompting, I started it and quite quickly finished two seasons. So it's extremely watchable and the characters are very likable. The storyline is, you know, intriguing, and some of the extra characters, not just like there's the key cast and then there's like the periphery and then there's like the third layer of like other weirdos, and they're just so compelling to watch. Like Byron's assistant, the redhead
Bennett
guy, like Bennett. Oh my God. Like seeing some of the
loyalty.
Yeah, it's great. Like they're all just so super compelling to watch, and to see where the story's going is great. I enjoy it.
One of my favorite lines from that is like, that's it, we're going. We're going out into the world. I'm going out into the world by myself. Pack our bags.
Yeah.
I love it. Peter.
I'm gonna say 80. Because I enjoyed it, but it's been a little bit of time since the first season. But I definitely think it ticks a lot of boxes for me, and I don't have any major complaints. Except maybe that like season two took me a little bit longer to get into, because it's a little bit more painful to watch characters that you've become more connected to start making more questionable decisions as the series progresses.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, that's something for me to look forward to. I'm going to rate it an 87 because I really enjoyed it. I love the idea. For me, that's sort of the key thing of going, okay, let's look at an abusive, manipulative relationship with that layer of tech on top of it, and then exploring it. You know, really kind of asking all of the questions about it and saying, okay, if you could get a lawyer, how do you try and do that? If you can try, what are the different methods you use to try to get out of this situation? And then seeing the emotional side of it as well, of realizing that nothing's simple. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that. So I think I said 87, I believe. 86.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Right.
Shall we season two trailer?
I think we should. Let's do that.
When can I get this chip taken out of my head? My dad's cancer is the only reason that I am here.
Oh, geez, 9:30 already. Enough sitting around a breakfast table. Let's go sit on the couch. What? Unless you got it.
Second he is better, we're leaving.
I know.
I just want to know how long I have to keep up this charade for.
12 weeks.
12 weeks, I can do it to 12 weeks.
As of today, my brilliant wife, Hazel, is going to take a more active role in the hub.
Are you ready for us, Mrs. Gogol?
Mr. and Mrs. Gogol, welcome to D.C.
Mrs. Gogol, did your husband put a chip in your head?
Don't speak.
I don't have a chip in my head.
Come again with that?
All right, listen up, everybody.
This could be the biggest case of our lifetime. We've got Gogol on insurance fraud, labor conspiracy, false imprisonment.
Run!
Who knows what else?
We're about to find out.
We've got you cleared for an undercover interview with the hub.
Nice to meet you, Mrs. Gogol.
Byron's using my father's life to hold me hostage.
I believe you want to take him down just as bad as I do.
Husband of the year.
Thanks.
I can't leave until we fix this.
Diane? We're in trouble.
Are we in outer space?
I'll come back for you, Diane.
I hadn't actually seen the trailer, so I was like, ooh, oh.
So based on that, Quinny, what do you think might happen?
Well, what I'm getting is that, I mean, one thing we didn't talk about in the first half is the father's cancer, and I wasn't sure whether we needed to hold off on that until spoiler land, and now we're in spoiler land. So
welcome to spoiler land.
Yeah. Yes.
Herbert has cancer. It's very sad.
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
It's
Herbert is not keen to get treated for his cancer. And this is where Hazel starts making questionable decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that question of autonomy and people being able to make their own life choices and
which is
control.
The very thing she was fighting for herself in season one.
That's why I enjoyed the end of season one so much, is because the moment that she then takes the power back and gets the thing saying that she's going to get a divorce, she makes a decision that you just go, oh, you learn nothing.
Exactly.
you are just as bad, only slightly different and for a better reason. And yeah, I'm guessing that there's an awful lot more to do with lying to the father and him not knowing that he's in a cube, and then bringing in Bangles and various other people to try and make things make sense to him. But at the same time, yeah, looking at that, and I love that she's just like, I'm going to fuck up your perfect world. I'm going to make a mess of it and I'm going to ruin everything because I don't have to play nice anymore. But that's also not good too.
Look, it is an interesting meal, season two, because I don't believe there's going to be a season three. And so it takes a lot of the character development from season one and quite skillfully kind of turns it on its head. But it's kind of a hard pill to swallow towards the end because, like Quinny said, like, we learned nothing. And there are also some kind of loose threads that get left around the place, I thought, in season two that I was kind of surprised didn't get an explanation. So some good setups that weren't paid off, and I wonder if there was meant to be a season three or not. The funniest thing for me about season two is Byron became a lot more likable, not like super likable, But it's kind of like you could almost like see him making an effort, and you start to kind of root for him to make the choice to do the right thing, because Hazel has kind of started to make a different set of choices. And then you can see, you know, that Byron has the potential to make the right choice. And then that comes like to a turning point where he actually does make a right choice. But it's kind of too late for it to mean anything for his arc. And I won't completely spoil exactly how the whole thing ends, because I think most of you guys haven't seen it and you may as well just enjoy it. But what did you think about that kind of, were you like a little bit more sympathetic to Byron, Jill, towards the end?
Yeah, kind of, because you could see that he was just a really fucked up man child, and that he didn't understand what he was doing was wrong and how it could be perceived as oppressive by other people. And so to see him actually cognizant of the fact that he was hurting people and maybe not doing cool stuff, he does really put in the effort. And I'm really disappointed that there's not going to be a third season, because I would like to see how this continues for the characters. And it kind of was a little bit chaotic in the second season with the addition of like the feds being brought in.
Jasper.
And then you've got like this, okay, but Hazel's trying to inflict change from the inside, and then you've got the feds on her ass and trying to dismantle everything before she like gets a chance to make any good changes. And
And you've got Fiffany in the prostitute and her backstory with her sister Bessica.
Another amazing name, yes. Bessica and Fiffany. Look, I'll be honest, it sounds like names that I made up for my Barbies.
Yes, just thinking that.
But a lot of fucking weird names when I play Barbies with my sister.
And we haven't even mentioned Judith.
But, Zelda the dolphin having romantic feelings for a man.
It gets even more absurd. It's great.
Good. I'm glad. Wow. Yeah.
The Paula Abdul cameo.
I saw her in the cast list and I was like, really?
She is a Google AI.
Of course. Amazing.
So the only thing that irritated me a little bit about it, I think, with you know, Byron's arc, is I don't necessarily always want to go down the path of, you know, this very
redeeming a villain.
Yeah, this very controlling, abusive male character. But oh, actually, it's because, you know, he had a bad childhood and like he's just been treated badly by life. I think that that's a dangerous and annoying line to walk.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think if you're going, I think the reason this series works is character development, and they kind of had to take him somewhere. And while I kind of enjoyed it because he came on super sympathetic, I like in equal measures was angry at the fact that he was becoming more sympathetic, because generally people who are that abusive know exactly what they're doing.
I just want to point out how angry I am at Rob right now.
This is a good joke.
I know, I'm angry at him because I would have loved to have made it. That Paula Abdul is a faulty Google AI. Oh, sorry, Google AI. She takes two steps forward and one step back. That's just for the podcast.
We should have Rob writing our jokes for us.
I know, right? Rob, do you want a job? I mean, the pay.
The pay is nothing.
I want to circle that back on that the cat from that music video was in the Chip and Dale fucking movie.
And you're like, what? Okay, good. Right.
Yeah, anyway.
I think I love what I saw of that, the second season, that it does feel like it's sort of broadening the scope out a little bit, but I guess that is a danger. If you broaden your scope, but you don't get a good ending, then as you say, you give yourself a few too many potentially loose threads that aren't ever going to be cleaned up. Which is,
I want to know what was going on with Byron's brother. That's a loose thread for me. There's a massive loose thread in Byron's backstory. That's like a major question has opened up and just never closed
they
out.
They don't revisit it, yeah.
They don't, which is a little bit of an error. Dion in the chat would like to know at yes. what point in the series should Byron have gone to jail because he's voting for episode one. That is correct. Mm. Byron should have gone to jail in episode one. The only reason he's not in jail is that nobody knows where the cube is.
Yes.
And then by season two, Hazel kind of keeps him out of jail, weirdly. So, yeah. But yeah. then he goes into a different kind of jail. So I feel like Dion would probably be satisfied with Byron's arc by the end of it.
Okay. Yeah. It is interesting because I like the way that it kind of plays on a whole bunch of, you know, romantic comedy tropes and everything, but then puts them on a really uncomfortable footing, you know, that we see in season one, you know, we see Hazel being a grifter or whatever, and then him kind of coming
in. Oh, yeah, the weird meet cute, the very staged meet cute.
Yeah, yeah. And you're kind of like, okay, that's interesting. And throughout, you know, you see him trying to replicate what he thinks love is meant to look like.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be a sequence on the beach where, you know, he's trying to get an AI version of her to say what he wants her to say. But yeah, he just is completely incapable of dealing with the real world. So in season two, is he more capable of dealing with the real world, or is he trying to pull back from it?
I think it's a weird thing that, like, his character is shut off from real life. So he's trying to replicate what he thinks a relationship should be. And in season two, I think he's kind of understanding that, you know, the way he went about it was wrong. And so now he's trying to replicate it again by doing what should be more natural, I guess. So, like, he's not really learning his lesson in that he's still trying to achieve the same results but do it naturally.
Yeah. And I love it in the end of season one where he's like, oh, I'm trying to this has been a really great thing because I've learned that the chip is a bad idea. It should be a patch that you put on for a period of time. And you're just right? Like, oh, for fuck, wow.
Like, he gets it, but at the same time, not, like, doesn't. Like, no. He understands that, oh, it's wrong, but oh, I forgot the point I was trying to make, but
yeah. Yeah.
Also feel like there's probably something in there to be said about our evolving attitude to technology and how elastic our attitude is to what we might not have accepted 15, 20, 30 years ago in terms of the massive amount of data that we give out about our lives, but we do without even thinking now. So who's to say in another 10, 20, 30 years that there are brain chips and we just kind of don't really think about the massive amount of data that we'll be giving out about our everyday lives.
And that we all do already every day because our phone tracks everywhere that we've been. You know, whether or not you've turned it off or anything, it's still tracking everywhere that you've been. You've only got to watch a true crime documentary to know that your cell phone can be pinged off multiple towers at any given time.
There's something truly frightening about Snapchat at the moment. In its most recent update, it can actually in real time locate users and you don't even know that it's happening, like right down to like Google Earth locations of your whereabouts.
What's particularly frightening is that it's doing that on purpose in order to provide that location to other users as a feature.
Yes.
This is not a feature that anyone wants.
No.
Yeah.
Particularly when it's primarily used by children.
Yeah. So it's just another avenue for predators to use to find, you know, underage people. And it's extremely scary because you don't even know that it's happening. like a parent might allow a child to use an app, but they don't know that these updates are coming through because they're not monitoring that for
no, and because stuff. At some point in time we all signed the agreement that said, yes, give me this because it's free. And yeah. when we did that, we gave it to Facebook. And, I quite often have conversations about the fact that most of the, like all of the stories that we hear about, this app's going to track you or this, you know, the sad part is most of them don't have to because we're exactly. already giving away most of the information that you're yeah. afraid that they have. You know, there was a lot of talk recently about use of facial recognition in Coles and Kmart and stuff like that. And that, you know, when you go up to a I don't know whether this is the case elsewhere in the world, but when you go up to a self-service checkout, they actually have cameras on there that are scanning your face. That now, whether or not it is for to know that your card matches up with who you are, or whether it is to check whether or not you have any problems with the store, that you're a known thief or anything like that, or whether it is just the standard fucking thing that everything does of, you know, everything's tracking you all the time. It's still fucking terrifying. You get to a point where you're like,
yeah,
if anyone was smart enough to actually be able to use the terrifying amounts of data, and, you know, you could be as invasive as Google.
Yeah.
But
I mean, turn off your app tracking data, friends.
Yeah.
Because, they're even saying that now with the repeal of Roe v. Wade in America, your menstruating data can now be tracked by the government, and they will know if you miss a period that you could be pregnant. And if you don't deliver a baby, they will come after you. So, this is the terrifying world that we live in.
And you know what? That's one of those stories that I look at and I think, I imagine Charlie Booker looking at that for an episode of Black Mirror and going, that's a bit much, isn't it? That's not going to happen, is it? Yes.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff I think, like Peter said, 20 years ago, we didn't think would ever happen is happening. And
we would never have agreed to.
Exactly.
20 years ago. We never would have gone, this is fine.
Yeah.
I want the app.
I do wonder whether or not a show like this 20 years ago or even 15 years ago or whatever would have been too much, would have been like, oh, that's ridiculous.
That's silly. Never...
Yeah. and now we're like,
I'm not too far. I'm calling this spec fiction. This is not too far from a future.
Catching up with reality.
I worry about it. And I love things like this because they allow us the opportunity to think about it and to question it and also to then hopefully make informed decisions to say, no, that's not a thing I want. You know, when the chip comes down that says, this is going to be amazing, it's going to allow you to never have to carry a wallet again, it's going to, you know, and sell you on all of the really cool things that the chip will do.
Yeah.
Hopefully there's a little part of your brain that just goes, yeah, no, I don't want that. I don't want everything that goes along with it. And, yeah, hopefully. I always remember, is it Years and Years? Do you guys remember?
Yes, that was very upsetting.
Yeah.
I love Russell Tovey so much.
Yes, love Russell Tovey. And looking at that now, you go, oh, fuck me, that was another show that's a little bit fucking close to the bone, isn't it?
Yeah.
Go and watch Heartstopper. I watched it for the third time on the weekend.
Oh, that will cure everything.
It is so delightful. I just feel like we just went somewhere really dark. So I need everybody to just go and watch Heartstopper because tell me what character you identify most with. I'm Isaac and I love Isaac very much.
The one that never talks.
The one that never talks and is always holding a book. He's the emotionally intelligent one who barely has anything to say and is always holding a book. And when he does have something to say,
it's profound.
It's kind.
Mm. Yes.
I think I am Tao because I am the oblivious to romance one. This person couldn't possibly like me.
On the second watch through, you realise that Isaac is actually shipping Tao and What's her name? Yeah. What's her name?
The trans actress who is
you know who I mean. Yes. On the second watch through, you realise that Isaac is shipping them long before any of us are.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
Rob asks, which streaming service has Heartstopper?
Netflix. The Netflix. So go and watch Made for Love on Stan and then go and watch Heartstopper on Netflix just for like a cleanse.
Yeah.
Just for a heart cleanse.
Warm hug.
It is. I'm so glad that, because a bunch of, like, I watched Heartstopper a couple of weeks back or 3 weeks or something like that. And I was just like, I want everybody to watch it because it's so good and it makes me so happy. Yeah. And it was just, you know, it felt so fucking joyful.
Yeah.
And I had a lovely thing. I was in a bookstore yesterday in Dimmicks and it's nice occasionally to see the world is changing. Mm. So I was down in the kids section, which is kind of weird. But in the YA area, there was this big wall that was all about
the comic,
but also just queer stories.
Oh, nice.
A whole big section that was all about queer stories aimed at YA. And I was just like, ah. And of course, Heartstopper featured very prominently.
Yes, I want to read the comic now.
Yeah.
I've heard very good things about it. And I'm excited that they've got two more seasons coming.
Yes. Yeah. It's just gentle and lovely and sweet. Yeah. So yeah.
And innocent and nice and
Yeah. It's all of those things that we should be enjoying. Dion asks, which Heartstopper character is he? I'm not sure.
Dion, you have to watch it and choose your own Heartstopper character. That's not how this works. You don't assign other people Heartstopper characters. You have to watch it and then your heart will take you to one of the characters.
Yes. Our silence is not scary. It's okay.
Maybe Dion's the art teacher.
See, I would happily Dion be the art teacher.
Dion would give you the room to go and be in by yourself.
Yeah.
He's like, do you want to be by yourself? Yeah, come on in.
Yeah. I love the art teacher. I think he's amazing. There's a heap of characters in there that I think are just really, really
anyway, awesome. Guess what? You guys have got homework to do this weekend.
Yes.
I've already done it.
You're ahead of the game.
I am ahead of the game.
I'm going to go and watch it tomorrow night.
Wonderful.
Yes, I'm very excited.
Peter, are you going to a cinema?
I'm also going to go and watch it tomorrow night. I have a plus one to a screening and I thought, excellent, take that up.
Excellent.
Yeah. Nice. Hopefully, so Dion's not particularly well at the moment, so hopefully he's able to, in some way, shape or form, enjoy the Thor, the love, the thunder, all of that exciting stuff. But if not, we will just ride across the rainbow bridge in his honour.
With our screaming goats.
Sorry, I just got really confused because the rainbow bridge is like the dead pet thing and I don't think that we want to.
I was talking about Bifrost, but you know what? wow!
And it's like you've just decided to put us all down, Quinny. I'm not sure how I feel about that.
I'm sorry. That's not what I meant. Not at all. Look, I'm very much looking forward to that. I know that Jill, you've got some strong opinions of it, having already seen it. You've given us your brief.
I gave it a 79.
I like that you're rating it ahead of time.
Favorite Marvel movie, but you know, it had its moments. That's all I'm gonna say. Anyway, go and watch it.
Yes, and we will also be putting out the information for the rest of July very shortly.
Yes, we have a schedule.
We do, even if I don't remember it. Also,
get anxiety, you'll never forget anything.
Like I don't already have that in some reasonable form. I was also going to mention something else then and completely gone. Yep, go on now.
Sorry.
Whatever it was. Oh, and we will be re-uploading the podcast for Chip and Dale and Lightyear because for some reason the file cut in half. So I've had a couple of people get in touch and say, the file stops and we don't get to hear what you think of Chip and Dale. So I was like, sorry. Yes. Right, well, that's been fun and dark and strange. Much like, you know, this show. I love it. Well, I have been Quinny.
I've been Jill.
I've been Peter.
And we will see you next week.
Yay. Bye.
Night. Thanks for listening to the Periodic Table podcast. If you have comments, feedback, questions, or suggestions, email info@theperiodictableofawesome.com. From our website, you can find our Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook links, as well as ways to donate to the show if you're feeling generous. And of course, you can join in the show live on Tuesday and Friday nights on our Twitch channel. Until next time, stay awesome!